We've got a new podcast that will help you get hockey smart. The Crosscheck Podcast, hosted by Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark, goes deeper into NHL stories than any other podcast with the help of the smartest minds on ice. Follow the Crosscheck Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.
You're Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Tuesday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. He had some good hockey last night that we're going to talk about tonight. The Leafs and the Canadiens, the Islanders, the Penguins. We'll go through the series that have ended also, including Oilers and Jets, which Mike is not happy about going to three overtimes because he had to work in that game.
Yeah, no, was not happy at all. I was the thing that's so weird about that game, and we'll get into it a lot more later in the show, but the amount of offensive firepower that are on both sides of that matchup, and the fact that no one scored a goal until triple overtime is just ludicrous.
I know. It's the goaltender, like with Mike Smith in that too, like I always feel like he's due to give up an easy one, a softy, and yeah, he was great. Didn't happen. Yeah, no, he was really good though.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll talk more about that series. Mike's tired. I've got allergies like going crazy. So if I sneeze throughout this episode, apologies beforehand. Although it's a podcast, I can just edit it out. So maybe I'll sneeze and you'll never know. So
I'm in the same boat, Joe. I am in the same boat. We don't live too far away from each other, so we probably are dying from the same bees that are pollinating both sides of the border.
Right. And our air conditioner at our house had an issue about 4 or 5 days ago. And anyone that lives around me and Mike in the Buffalo, Southern Ontario area, it's been hot. It's been really hot. So the combination of the heat, the air conditioner not working for the last couple of days, and the allergies kicking up, it's been brutal for the last couple of days. But it's going right now. We actually turned it back on this morning. So I think it should be a little bit better. Anyways, back to hockey. Let's start with the series that is over. The Boston Bruins get past the Washington Capitals in 5 games. Washington takes game one, and then Boston wins the next 4. Were you surprised that series was that short? Let's start there.
I was. I really was. I think we talked about this being one of the better series heading into the playoffs, one that I was most excited for because I felt that it was an insanely even series. And Boston really just kind of ran away with it. They got going. The top line of Pastrnak and Marchand and Bergeron really got hot. They scored at will. And then they got some depth scoring as well. Krejci was doing some things there. Craig Smith, Taylor Hall had a couple of goals. You know, so I think that the Bruins really, we said this all along that we felt that they were going to be the team to come out of that division. But I was surprised that it only went 5 games. I thought for sure that Washington had a couple more wins in them. And I pegged this thing going 6 or 7 at the, like for sure. But guess not. Boston takes it in 5 and good for them.
Yeah, me too. I thought it would go further than that. I had a lot of respect for the Capitals as a team overall, but Boston, right. We both had it coming in that they were the best team in that division. And they looked like it in that series. Real quick, any chance that this is it for Alex Ovechkin in Washington? I think probably everybody agrees that the answer to that is no, but he is a free agent. So I think we at least have to ask the question.
Well, I'm offended that you're asking the question, and I can't say no quick enough. That what are you talking about? It's Alex Ovechkin. He's going to come back. He's definitely going to re-sign in Washington, and they're going to try and load it up and go for another cup. I don't think that their window is closed because they have like some younger pieces too. It's not like Pittsburgh, their window's a little bit shorter in my opinion because they've got older guys, whereas Ovechkin is the oldest guy and Backstrom. But then after that, you've got a decently young core. You've got a good young goalie in Samsonov. John Carlson is, what, 30 or 31? So he still has a couple of years to go. They traded for Anthony Mantha, who's kind of right in his prime. They got Kuznetsov. But they've got some good young pieces that are still part of that core. So I don't think that the Stanley Cup window is shut for Washington. And for that reason, I think it's a no-brainer that Ovechkin will be back to try and bring the cup back to the capital.
I do agree. I have a vision though of just like if this was fantasy sports, and Ovechkin was like, you know what, I really just want that goal record. And like, where's the best opportunity I have to get that goal record? I'm gonna go play shotgun with Connor McDavid in Edmonton because I'm definitely gonna score 50 to 60 goals for the next 3 years. If I do that. But again, right, he's got a good situation in Washington. He doesn't need to be thinking that way. Just kind of my brain spinning. Like, all right, what would it take? But really, if he would be 99.9% to me to return to Washington, that 0.1% though would probably be the KHL.
Yeah,
like that if he leaves, if there was any chance at all that he's thinking about leaving, I would think it's got to be for Russia. But the reason I don't think there's any chance of that happening is I've mentioned this before when we talk about the goal record with Gretzky. He has said multiple times in interviews that he wants that goal record, and he is not leaving now when he's still got a chance at it. That's my thought on that.
Yeah, that's another reason for him to stay, right? To get that. I saw some plug on Twitter, actually. I woke up, I think it was yesterday, actually, and just like most people do, you kind of just look at your notifications that you received while you were asleep. And I got like a notification from Twitter, just like a recommended tweet, which I absolutely hate. I've turned them off and they still come to me.
I hate those too. Yeah.
But anyways, a recommended tweet from some random guy saying, breaking news, Alex Ovechkin has signed with Dynamo of the KHL, blah, blah. I'm like, what? And then I click on the tweet and I'm like, that's, and then I go and I look at all the, 100%. And then I go and I look at all the insiders, absolutely nothing. I'm like, that's just nothing.
You, at least you didn't retweet it or anything.
No.
All right, well, let's get to the other East division that's going on right now. The Islanders with a 3-2 overtime win over the Penguins in game 5 on Monday night. They lead the series 3-2. The series hasn't necessarily been this way the whole way, but Mike, I don't know how much of that game you saw last night. I thought Pittsburgh dominated the Islanders from beginning to end. This wasn't even like a typical Islanders win where they really shut down the opposing team and it's kind of a low event hockey game. I thought a rare instance for the Islanders was their goaltender was asked to do a lot and Ilya Sorokin came through big time and Pittsburgh's goaltender Tristan Jarry was not able to answer the call. And obviously, what a way to lose in overtime with the pass right to Josh Bailey.
Oh, that was brutal. Just absolutely brutal. Jarry's costing the Penguins this season. Like he really is. Game one was atrocious and he was horrible again. Well, he wasn't good again in game 5. And obviously that giveaway to Bailey was just brutal. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, just like we were saying about Washington, Pittsburgh doesn't have as long to win a cup. I think their window like kind of ends this season. I really do believe that they need to, if they want to win another cup. If Crosby and Malkin and Letang, that core wants to win one more before, you know, it's all said and done here in Pittsburgh, I think this has to be the season. I don't know. I think that this team is aging out a little bit. You know, contracts are going to start coming up. We'll see what ends up happening with everybody. There was already rumors that Letang may have been on the block like as early as this season and maybe going into the offseason. Remember, they got new front office management and stuff. So they very well could decide to switch some things up heading into next year. So, you know, it's unfortunate that they're not getting the goaltending that they need because the offense has been there. They've been able to get some goals. Brian Rust, you know, Malkin's back. Letang's getting on the score sheet. Crosby's doing his thing, obviously, Gensel. But at the end of the day, the goaltending needs to hold up too. And Tristan Jarry is not doing his part. Meanwhile, you got Ilya Sorokin, rookie, who's playing phenomenally. Phenomenally.
He was so good last night. He let in the one bad goal. Well, do I even want to count it as a bad goal? A slap shot from almost the blue line on the wall by Brian Rust. It's a hell of a shot. I think I want him to make that save, but otherwise, he was awesome in that game. He goes in for Varlamov. I think they're going to, obviously, I think they're going to roll with him for the next game or so. They've got a great one, too. So if a guy has an off game, they could go right back to Varlamov. But yeah, like you said, like Pittsburgh was generating offense. They doubled the Islanders up in scoring chances last night, 36-18. And high danger scoring chances was even better in favor of Pittsburgh, 14-4. So they were the better team last night. They just didn't get the quality goaltending from Jarry. And it's funny you mentioned Malkin and Letang, because I'm sure there will be a team that once we get to the offseason we talk about a little bit, because, right, Brian Burke, Ron Hextall, new regime, And you've got Malkin and Letang going into contract seasons. Both of their contract expire after next year. So I think I agree with you that this is like their final chance to get their real big final chance to get a cup. And as of right now, the Islanders are obviously favored in that series. In fact, the series is favored to end in six games. BetOnline has it -110 for the Islanders to win it in six. And second is Pittsburgh in seven. So BetOnline thinks if it goes to seven, it's going to be Pittsburgh, but they think the Islanders are going to get it in game six.
They're just banking on the home teams winning those games,
right? That's right. So if you were betting on that, what would you do at this point? It's -110 for the Islanders in six, +240 for the Penguins in seven, Islanders +280.
I'll take the money on the Penguins in seven. I'll take the plus money there. I think
that's what I would do.
Yeah, yep. That's where I would go with it. I still think the Penguins are the better team, and like,
dude,
they outshot them 50-28.
Yeah,
like I understand Sorokin's a fantastic goaltender, but like the Pens have some dynamite goal scorers. Like Gensel's a 40 goal scorer. Brian Rust can put up 25-30 in a season.
Zucker.
You've got Crosby, you've got Malkin, yep. You've got Zucker, you've got Letang from the back end. Like they've got some really good goal scorers. Eventually, they're gonna start finding their way into the back of the net. You know, the Islanders, who I've always kind of thought didn't really have much in the tank when it comes to offense. If Jari just plays a little bit better, I think this is a 4-1 series win for the Penguins. I really do, because they would have won last night and they would have won in game one. And that's 4-1. This series should have been done. And the Penguins should be getting ready to play the Boston Bruins.
Yeah. Pittsburgh's a sneaky Stanley Cup bet right now because they're down in the standings or down in the series. They're +2,800. Those are astronomical odds. I would be more tempted if I just don't trust Jari. It really comes down to it. I could never bet on them to win the cup because I don't think the goaltending can get them that far. That's where I'd be with them. All right, well, let's take a timeout here. We'll get to the North Division. Edmonton is done. Winnipeg is already advanced, and we've got the Leafs and the Canadiens in going into game four tomorrow night. So we'll talk about that series when we come back on the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DeStefano. Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients. Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine that come in 3 flavors, cherry ice, citrus, and mint. Lucy lozenges and gum are FSA and HSA eligible, so you can use your FSA cards to purchase Lucy now, and it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym. It's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple, and you don't have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. Lucy lozenges and gum are also FSA and HSA eligible, so you can spend pre-tax dollars on them. Locked On NHL Network listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONNHL to get 20% off of all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use the promo code LOCKEDONNHL at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer, warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co, and be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDONNHL.
RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. A word for Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but you got the NBA, college hoops, the NHL, all in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. For these Saber games, you could bet on the exact amount of which either the Sabres or their opponent will win by. So if you think the Sabres are going to win by exactly two, you can find odds for the Sabres winning by exactly two. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. The best way to place your bets, and it is free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline.ag is the site. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code Locked On.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano. We just went over the East Division, the two playoff series, one that's been done. The Capitals lose to the Bruins in five. We've got the Islanders up 3-2 on the Penguins. Now let's jump over to the North Division, where we also have a series that has ended. The Jets sweep the Edmonton Oilers. Let's start there. An obvious three straight overtime games, by the way, that all went in favor of Winnipeg, including that insane game three where the Jets erase a 4-1 deficit in a matter of minutes late in the third period. I was surprised that this was swept, maybe even more surprised than I was by Boston beating Washington in five. Really, like Mike, really, doesn't a lot of that have to be the way the Jets limped into the playoffs, that they would just be done with Edmonton just like that in four games?
Well, yes and no. I'm surprised only partly. So the Jets, it depends what you mean by limped. The last month of the season, definitely a limp. The last like 2 weeks, they kind of turned things around and started to play more like the style of game that we know the Jets can play. They're a very talented team. And all along, I always felt that the Jets were the better team, and all they need to do is shut down McDavid and Draisaitl, and they were going to win this series. And Paul Maurice is an extremely talented and smart coach, and I just had a feeling that he'd be able to do that. There was Connor Hellebuyck, who had a brutal season during the regular season against the Oilers. Like, if you look at these matchups through the regular season, like, the Oilers were favored heavily going into the series because they absolutely ran away with it in the regular season. They just mopped the floor with the Jets. But like I said, you shut down McDavid, you shut down Draisaitl, which they pretty much did. Like, McDavid only had one goal through this series, and wasn't a factor in game one and two either. And at the end of the day, they weren't able to muster up any type of depth scoring. And that was always the biggest issue when it came to the Oilers. And the Jets, they have that in droves. Last night, they got one from Mason Appleton. They got a couple from Mark Scheifele. Kyle Connor scored, obviously. But, like, Andrew Kopp can score for them. You know, Nick Ehlers came back, and he scored the OT winner. Like, they've got a lot of guys who could put the puck in the back of the net. And they did it as a team, in which you look at the Oilers, and I don't know if you saw this last night, the time on ice for some of these guys.
Yeah, but, Nurse especially.
Oh, my God.
Nurse played 62 minutes, right?
62 minutes per Nurse. And they had Slater Cuckoo play 9 minutes and 58 seconds. That's they literally only played four defensemen for the last half of the game. Like, I think it was mid third period or something like that, Ethan Bear and Slater Cuckoo were stapled to the bench basically the rest of the game. I think Bear ended up getting some more penalty killing time later in the in the third period after that puck over glass, which I want to talk to you about. We could discuss something about that in a second. But yeah, that was absolutely wild, that the 62 minutes. And if you take a look at who played the most for Winnipeg, it was Josh Morrissey at 41 minutes. Like, look at that discrepancy. 41 minutes. That's how more balanced and that's how much trust that Paul Maurice had in his lineup. You look at the forwards. Mark Scheifele played 40 minutes, but for the most part, you know, everybody played pretty well balanced. He actually, this looks like his fourth line didn't really touch the ice in the overtime either. Lewis and Nate Thompson only had about 7 minutes of ice time. But, you know, I just, there's so much more depth on Winnipeg, and it just makes sense. But a four game sweep, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, me neither. So McDavid sounded very frustrated in this post game. I think that's obvious. And I like how some people like make a lot of that. What did you expect him to sound like? That's one thought I had. But he did say the regular season means nothing, and you do have to wonder a little bit about his frustrations in Edmonton. I do not believe McDavid is anywhere near where, for instance, the Sabres are right now with Jack Eichel. But I also do have the thought in the back of my head, like, I wonder if this is the Sabres-Eichel situation, but 2-3 years prior. Because if Edmonton goes a couple more years and, you know, they're either out of the playoffs or they just get rolled once they're in it, you never know. That guy's a competitor. He wants to win games. He knows he's got to know he's one of the best players in hockey. Maybe he knows he's the best player in hockey. And really, they kind of remind me of the Sabres just with McDavid is an upgraded version of Eichel, obviously, and Dreisaitl is an upgraded version of Reinhardt. But everything else, like, they kind of just try to piece everything together. They have Nugent Hopkins. I guess that's a big difference, too. But past those three, it's like their forward group is usually pretty thin, and the blue line, and you usually have a lot of guys that are playing more minutes than they should be. You just went through the numbers. I mean, Nurse is a good defenseman, but he shouldn't be playing, you know, 55% of your minutes. And then goaltending, they did get great goaltending from Mike Smith all season this year, but that's kind of been an anomaly since McDavid showed up. They've kind of been trying to piece goaltending together, and in large part, you know, they haven't had that level of goaltending. So if I'm McDavid, I would be very frustrated. I would not, of course, be anywhere near asking to be traded. But there should be some pressure on the Oilers, I think, to build a contender around McDavid.
Yeah, 100%. There's got to be some pressure there for them to do something. Ken Holland inherited this team last offseason,
I think that's right.
Yeah. And if you take a look at the cap friendly right now, they've got a lot of contracts that are coming up this year. So there's going to be a chance for some turnover here and try and build this team the way that he believes the team needs to be built for success. I'm looking now, they looks like they are projected to have about $22 million in cap space this summer. So, you know, I think, and with that, they got to get Tyson Barry signed. They got to get Ryan Nugent Hopkins signed. If they want to bring him back. Kyler Yamamoto is up as an RFA, and Adam Larson also needs to get re-signed. But outside of that, you know, they're going to still have a little bit more cap space. Mike Smith too, actually, if he comes back. But they're going to have a little bit of cap space to work with here, and maybe bring in another goal scoring threat, because that's what they're missing, man. They just need some sort of offense, man. Like, they just didn't get it from anyone else not named Connor or Leon. Like, even like Nuge wasn't as much as a threat as he'd been in the past. Like, if he wasn't playing on a line with McDavid and Dreisaitl, he wasn't really able to drive up and muster up much offense. Like, they just couldn't do anything. And the problem is, whenever the team got down, like they did, you know, down 3-0 in the series, okay, we got to put Connor and Leon together and get them playing so we can get some offense and get a win. And then all of a sudden, that dries out your entire back three lines. And then when they actually do shut down McDavid and Dreisaitl, which Winnipeg did a fantastic job of doing, you didn't get any offense from anyone else.
Right. That's exactly right. And they need to get to a point, and they need to weaponize that cap space to a point where they don't feel the need to have Leon Dreisaitl on Connor McDavid's wing to give him somebody to play off of. You know, like I think of Pittsburgh for many years now. Like, they will put Malkin with Crosby, but typically it's power play or it's near the end of games when they got to tie it up. You know, they do it when they have to. They absolutely have to. Edmonton, it feels like they're almost desperate to get McDavid a line mate that can match his level of play, even near it, that they feel like they have to put Dreisaitl there. And really what you should want if you're the Oilers is to have what Pittsburgh has. You know, surround McDavid and Dreisaitl with quality line mates. They don't have to be superstars, but quality enough line mates where you don't feel the need to have them together. That's, I think, what their goal should be this offseason.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. The problem with this team, too, I'm just taking a look. You're paying $5.75 million to James Neal. You're paying $3.2 million to Zach Kassian. You're paying $4.5 million to Mikko Koskinen.
Like, that's the one. That one's so bad.
that one does suck. Plus, you got Andre Sequeira buyout and Benoit Pouliot buyout. Actually, the Pouliot buyout comes out this year, but you got a $1.5 million you're paying towards Andre Sequeira, and then they've got
almost a million in dead cap going to Lucic almost.
Exactly. Yeah. So like there's just a lot of badly spent cap on this team that is hindering them, right? Like they're right up against it. And obviously the flat cap due to the pandemic did not help the situation in Edmonton, and it makes things a lot more difficult to retool and give McDavid some sort of depth around him. Yeah. But they're in the NHL. Kenny Holland's been a longtime general manager. It's his job to fix that team. That's what he was brought in to do. And so far, I mean, when you get eliminated in round one of the playoffs last year, you get eliminated in the bubble, didn't even make the playoffs technically. So you are 0-2 when it comes to your playoff success since taking over as general manager. He's not doing a very good job. And I think he's got this offseason to do something. If they don't win a round next year, I think it's bye-bye for the Holland regime.
Yeah. I'll throw, just real quick, Zach Kassian, I would throw into that bad money spent group because this year was his – did you have him in there?
Yeah, 3.2.
3.2, because this was his first year really away from McDavid. He got the big contract in large part because of his production with McDavid. This year he's away from him and he has 5 points in 27 games. Oh, really? Like, not – That's incredibly surprising. He doesn't play with McDavid, and he's not actually that good. Funny how that works.
Production, like he career high of 34 points.
Right, even with McDavid, like he was good, but he wasn't Jake Guentzel with Crosby. You know, he wasn't scoring 30, 40 goals.
I have one quick question before we move on from the Oilers, because I know we're wrapping this thing up to move over to Leafs Habs, but. So I don't know how much of that game that you actually watched last night. I know it was a very late one.
I didn't stick with it really past the first overtime, but otherwise I watched most of it.
Okay, so you don't really have to, but there was a lot of like interference and like stick infractions, hooking, slashing, just like stick penalties, lazy stick penalties from basically being super tired from playing, you know, 9 periods of hockey within like a 24-hour span. That being said, not a lot of penalties. There was one penalty called in the opening overtime, nothing in the second, and then the only penalty that got called in the third overtime was a puck over glass. Now, puck over glass, there's nothing you could do about it. You have to call that because it's so blatantly obvious.
Right, but it's not subjective.
It's not subjective. And because of that, doesn't that, like, don't you hate the fact that, like, the play before, let's say, Winnipeg gets away with a pretty blatant hook, in my opinion. And because it's overtime, they just put the whistles away. But then Edmonton, because they had a puck over glass penalty, which they're still both 2-minute infractions. It's the same same level of rule breakingness. I know it's not a word, but I can't think of the word right now.
I know what you mean, though.
They have to call that one, and then Edmonton goes down shorthanded. Meanwhile, they should have had a penalty. They should have been on the power play when that play happened, and that probably would have even happened. And there was multiple penalties throughout the entire overtimes that just never got called. Because you have to call the ones that you have to call, such as puck over glass, or like a different one, different penalties.
High sticking would be one if there's blood, like where it's too obvious.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I guess like a double minor you would have to call if it's pretty obvious, but even that sometimes.
Too many men sometimes. Yeah. Right. There's a couple others, but I think I like where you're going with this because it
called a rule.
The only thing I'm the only thing I'm thinking of here is you, by not calling the rule book in overtime, you're making puck over the glass like the most outrageous penalty that you could have.
Yes.
Like that's not the way I really want to word that, but I think you know what I mean. Where like it shoots to number one of the most egregious foul that you could have in the sport in overtime is just putting the puck over the glass. And that only is because they will not call the rule book once overtime starts. They will not call hooking. They will not call tripping. They will not call anything that is not blatantly obvious. And it's just like, they won't call anything that they won't get hammered for if they don't call it. Yeah, and to me, that's the rule book should not change, whether it's the first period or it's overtime. And I think the NHL really is kind of the only sport that does that. Like the NFL, if there's a pass interference call with 10 seconds left, they will call the pass interference call. And the refs don't get blamed for it, unless it's like an awful call. But who will get blamed for it? The cornerback that had the infraction after the game. And to me, that's where the blame should reside. If a guy, if Dreisaitl last night in double overtime trips a guy, to me, it shouldn't be, oh, the ref should have never called that. It should be, Leon Dreisaitl shouldn't have tripped that guy. But because they don't call it, we don't think that way.
Exactly. Like, I just think they need to just call the rule book, because it's funny, actually. I saw a meme about, like, midway through the second period. It was, like, three stacks of paper. So it was, like, one, it was, like, NHL rule book during the regular season. It was, like, this thick-ass novel that was, like, 2 feet high of paper. And then it was, like, in the playoffs, it was, like, oh, just a little novella, like, a few pages. And then it was, like, playoffs and overtime, and it was one single sheet of paper. And that's the rule book when it comes to the playoffs. And it's true. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't call anything. And It makes, like, those puck over glass and, like, those no discussion black and white penalties just so egregious. And it's unfortunate because there's so many other penalties. And listen, I didn't want that game to go to triple overtime, right? I was at work and I couldn't leave.
Yeah, you wanted to go home.
I wanted to go home. If there's a tripping call or a hooking call in the second overtime period, call that thing. Let McDavid go to the power play and allow him to score and allow us all to go home. Like, I don't know why you're trying to drag it on. We want more scoring. We don't want things to go into extras as long as it can. We don't want to drag on. Call the penalties. Call the rule book. If someone scores on the power play, guess what? You shouldn't have hooked the guy. That's part of the game. Like, come on.
Yep, I love it. Okay, but before we run out of time here, let's get to the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens. You cover the Leafs for Locked On Leafs. So if you want more than just a couple of minutes here on that series, head over to Locked On Leafs and check it out with Mike. The series is 2-1. I think there was a little bit of panic maybe in Toronto after game one. I mean, that's just going to happen, I think, when you go down 1-0 to anybody, especially with their history, losing 4 years in a row in the first round. Just for sake of conversation, I'm just going to consider the Columbus series first round for this. But now after two more games, even without John Tavares, we have not spoken since that collision. That was, I mean, just brutal looking. Hope that he's okay and he's going to be back soon. I think a couple weeks, right, Mike? Did I see right that maybe he'll be out?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's
kind of iffy, though.
Yeah, like they said, minimum 2 weeks, but he's out indefinitely.
Okay, definitely.
We'll see. Okay. I think that's best case scenario, because when you saw the actual collision, or you saw him trying to get up more so.
That was the moment.
Yeah, you saw him buckle and his head just tilt back. Like that did not look good at all. And then, you kind of unfortunately, but like thought the worst when it comes to that type of injury. And they came out and said, it's just a concussion. Like that's what's being reported, at least, is a concussion. And I guess a small knee injury as well on the play, apparently, tweaked a knee or something. But so, I mean, best case scenario, I suppose, was that it's only going to miss a couple of weeks. I was fully prepared when I went to bed that night thinking that we weren't going to see John Tavares for the rest of the playoffs. So if he does end up returning, that's best case scenario for him and for the Leafs.
Gotcha. All right. So what do you make of the Leafs through three games? To my eyes, they have been the better team. I think Price has been pretty good in net for Montreal. I'm not sure he's been quite to the level of the Hart Trophy, Vezina level goaltender that we've seen in the past. I think he's been pretty good. I think the Leafs have been the better team in this series, and I would pick them right now to win. I think they'll finish this series in five. I think the way they look the last couple of games, even though last game was maybe more even, would you agree with that? Game three was maybe a little bit more even.
Yeah, the Canadiens really push in the third period there to try and tie it up. But, you know, both goalies have been fantastic. I think that Carey Price has been pretty vintage, actually. The first game, he was making a lot of huge stops, and Toronto was really pouring it on. and he didn't allow anything to get past him, right? Like, just one goal is all that they were able to score, and it was just like a rebound goal that was sitting at the, you know, at the side of the net that Nylander pounced on. But in terms of like point blank shots, you couldn't beat the guy. And last night, kind of much of the same. Like, he was just making a lot of unbelievable stops. He made that one paddle save on Jason Spezza, which was unreal. I don't know if you saw this. If you didn't, or anyone who's listening, go check it out on Twitter. He made an unreal paddle save on Spezza in the first period there. But he kept that game to 1-0 for a little bit, kept that team in it. This easily could have been a 5-6-1 game going into the second period, but it wasn't. It was only 2-1. And then that allowed Montreal, once they came into the third, they got going. And I think I saw they outshot Toronto like 15-2 or something like that in the third period. Like, they poured it on, and it was Jack Campbell's turn to play hero, and he did last night. He was just great, and which is such a breath of fresh air, because goaltending has kind of been the Achilles heel for the Maple Leafs for so many years. So it's nice that, you know, they're actually getting some quality goaltending here in the playoffs with Jack Campbell. And you're right. I'm predicting this will probably end in five as well. And it's what, game four goes down tonight in Montreal. So hopefully it can go well. Nick Foligno, though, didn't play last night. I don't know if you saw that, but
I saw that. Yep.
Yeah. So he didn't play. So Riley Nash ended up coming back into the lineup, but Foligno is going to be a game time decision for tonight's game. Yeah, I the series has been, it's been closer than I thought, though. I'll say that it has been closer than I thought. Although Toronto has like carried play, I think that Montreal is putting up a better fight than I envisioned. I'll give them the credit for that.
All right. Well, you can get more on Leafs Canadiens from Mike at Locked On Leafs. That's going to do it, though, on today's show. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Me and Tom Gazzola will be back on Friday. I'm going to poke Tom a little bit on the Oilers, who he covers. So we'll talk a little bit more about the Oilers and the Jets series, but we'll bounce around the rest of the league on Friday in the Central Division and the West Division. So me and Mike will be back next Tuesday, me and Tom on Friday. So until then, thanks everybody for listening. This has been the Locked On NHL Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.